So I said I sent out an email yesterday saying, teasing you all with a telephone call from a convicted felon. I'll tell you what happened. I listened to this podcast called Planet Money on NPR. Anybody listen to NPR? No, I mean, it's an American thing. Why would you? All right. It's about economics. It's boring. And it's about economics and the economy and all that. And one day they did this feature on this guy named Sam Antar, who is the nephew of a guy named Eddie Antar, who had a chain of stores in the 1980s called Crazy Eddie's. Does that ring a bell? Sort of. Like, they had these ads for Crazy Eddie's that would just, like, scream at you and say, Crazy Eddie's has the lowest prices in town, whatever, whatever, whatever. So it turns out that Crazy Eddie's was a front for white-collar crime. That they started with tax embezzlement, and it sort of graduated from there. Yeah, go for it. It sort of graduated from the little stuff, from small stuff, all the way up to real serious securities fraud, cheating investors out of millions and millions and millions of dollars. Just, as bad as you could get. So, and he in 1990-something, late 80s, he was caught, and he turned state's evidence, and he spoke about, on this program, about how he... basically how he cheated on people and how easy it is to become a white-collar criminal and make millions of dollars by lying and cheating and fraud. Very interesting. So then they asked him a very interesting question. They said, do you feel bad about what you did? I mean, do you ever feel like you should apologize for the way that you, for what you did for the people that you stole from? So he said the following. He said, apologies are irrelevant. They don't change anything. It does not undo any crimes. Does an apology erase the effect of past criminal behavior? As a person who used words to deceive and lie to others in the commission of my crimes, I say you must judge people by their actions and not by their words. Too often we're moved by well-meaning but empty words. He wrote it on his blog later on, the way he said it struck me. What? He's out of prison. This was years ago. He got out of prison, and I'll tell you what he's done later. It's a very interesting guy. And so he said, so I was very taken by this. I was listening to it at the beginning of Elul. I was very taken by the notion that he said that apologies, what does it matter whether I feel bad or not? What do you care whether I feel bad? What do you care whether I say I'm sorry or not? You know what I'm saying? Like, do you feel like, and we really, when somebody like does something in public that's bad, so the first thing the public waits for is, well, did he apologize? And as soon as you have that like public apology, I feel terrible, like my mother made me do it or whatever, then like that's the first step towards public rehabilitation. Really, it's totally true. If you think like the public really just cares while you apologize. And he says, who cares whether you apologize or not? What I'm really more interested in knowing is, have you changed? Are you doing something different? And I was very struck by that, because when you look at Hilchot Tshuva, right, it seems that apologies, of course changing your actions are important, but apologies are critical. Rambam says, and so I blogged about this, the Rambam says that when you come to Yom Kippur, right, Yom Kippur only works for mitzvot ben adam l'makom. Right? You ate treif, or you should have davened, or you didn't bench, or all those things. You know. So then you go to Hashem on Yom Kippur, you say, I'm sorry, and he says, no problem, I forgive you. The Rambam says, but mitzvot ben adam l'chavero, Yom Kippur will do nothing for you, at she'elechlo, you go to your friend, v'yifaisenu b'dvarim. You have to verbally appease. You have to apologize. You have to say you're sorry. And so I said two things. I said, on the one hand, apologies are, of course, not supposed to be lip service. You're not supposed to say, oh yeah, I'm so sorry, and not mean a word of it, which is what I think he's afraid of, that people apologize in order to get the public rehabilitation. But even more important, I think this is a very good lesson or relevance, when you apologize to somebody, let's say you feel bad about something you did to somebody, and you apologize, you have to emotionally subjugate yourself to that person. You put yourself, in a sense, on a lower level than that individual. In a sense, you're saying, please forgive me. You're really putting them in a position of power over you. And you're asking them, you're putting yourself in their hands. And even if it's insincere, you still have to do that. You have to make that emotional sort of leap in order to subjugate yourself in front of the other person. That's not easy. Like, it's not even easy to do, and I don't know, you know, for you, but for me, when you come to tshuva, when you come to vidui, even for the things that between me and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, just the ability to articulate and to say, I did X, Y, Z, right, that's hard to do. And that in and of itself I think is relevant. Great, I published the post. Actually, I published the post. I've been writing it for a while. I published it yesterday at about 9:40. 9:43, I get an email from this guy, Sam Antar.
No.
Yes. He says, "Dear Rabbi Reuven Spolter, the guy who was convicted and he spoke on the program, the guy who was interviewed at 9:42, he lives in Queens. So I get a little strange. He said, your blog post about apologies is excellent. My point is that many people are victimized by criminals when they accept their apologies at face value. He just wrote me an interesting point, etc., etc. So he goes, with great respect, he signs it. Hi, welcome. He signs the email with great respect, Sam E. Antar, parentheses, convicted felon. That's how he signs all of his correspondence, convicted felon. So I write back, wow, that was quick. I'm in Israel, like, you know, it's 2 a.m. in New York. Are you sleeping? He says I had a bad dream or whatever. You know, like, it was a strange story. You know, like I blog about a guy who's like, you know, he's interviewed on Fox News. No. This is a while ago. He actually never served. He turned state's evidence against his uncle, Eddie Antar, who ran away to Israel, was extradited back. You know, it's like a just crazy story. Anyway, so I said, you know, it's interesting because there's the Gemara talks about different Baalei Tshuva.
Is he Jewish?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, really, seriously. Yeah. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says something interesting. The Gemara talks about someone who is Pasul Le'edut. Pasul Le'edut means that he stole. Like, there are certain kinds of, like, professional gamblers. The Mishnah says these are psule edut, mafrich hayonim, and somebody who lends on interest, and someone who's a professional gambler. So the Gemara has a very interesting question. The Gemara says, well, when is that person able to testify again? That person isn't able to testify again. Says not when he says, oh, I forget it, I'm never going to do it again. That's not enough. Says he has to, like, destroy his shells, as it were. He has to rip up his cards. He has to be a person who will never do it again. Like, he has to take concrete action towards the tshuva. A very, very interesting concept. So I said that to him. I said, you know, how many of us would sign our emails, you know, like, nice speaking to you, have a good day, Reuven Spolter, former embezzler, you know what I'm saying? Tax cheater, you know, like, we don't really do that. I said, but I had a few questions for him. The first question I said to him was, like, why do you think that stealing didn't bother you personally or ethically? He said, like, you know, he just grew up stealing and it sort of escalated. And then he said, I'm just interested in that question. So he writes me back, like, right away, and he says, I'd love to answer you, but I'd rather do it on the phone. And he actually wrote, and anything I say to you, you can publicize. So I don't feel bad about telling you this because he said that explicitly. So I send him my number, and he calls me right away. You know, this is a very interesting thing. So, what?
Nothing else to do.
Not at 2:30 in the morning in New York, you know. There's more to it, which I won't tell you. It was a little personal. Very interesting. People open up quite easily. it's so interesting. So I said, what I'm really curious about is, you didn't start off in life as a cheater on your as a securities fraud person. Like, you don't start off that way. I have two questions. What happened? Like, don't you feel like, didn't at some point your conscience tell you, maybe I shouldn't, you know, lie on this income report to defraud investors of millions of dollars? Like, did that ever come into play, A? And I said, B, how did it happen? Like, where were your parents in all this? Which is a very interesting question to me. So he said to me, he said that he started working for his uncle when he was 13. His uncle, Eddie, was 24. You can imagine a kid at 13 working for a 24-year-old uncle, like, you know, he looked up to him and so he said, the first thing that happens is, you know, you cheat on your taxes. They said that's how they started, right? That crazy Eddie's never made money, never paid state income tax. He said that's how a lot of stores make their money, because they charge exactly what it costs them, but the markup is the 8% New York state income tax. So, but then he says, well, you get stolen from, you lose a shipment. So how does the insurance company know whether you lost 10 stereos or 30 stereos? So you steal 30 stereos instead of 10 stereos. He said, and from then it's like a slippery slope. He said something really interesting. He said that you don't start as a securities fraud person. Right? You start by cheating on your taxes. You start by taking a skimming a little off the top. And once you do that, then you go from there to the next step, it's the same. And then to go from there to the next step, and before you know it, you're serving, you know, 11 years in a federal penitentiary and millions of dollars in lawyer fees, and you know what I'm saying? And that's really how it starts. And the parenting thing I'll come back to a little later. And the reason I'm sharing this with you is because, like, when we come to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and the notion of tshuva, like, it's impossible for a person in a position here to say, oh, I want to be clean from everything. It doesn't work that way. You're faced with choices in life, to decide to go, you know, one to the right or to the left from the position that you're at now. And the goal is, in every area, really, to make the decision not to start. And if you're in the middle of doing something, you have to decide to make the right decision in that way, in the choice of where you are today. You know, because very often, if you're a person that's in a position where you're in the middle of something, you're habituated to do something, and as soon as you say to yourself, I'm going to go cold turkey, it really never works. It's almost impossible. But if you say to yourself, I'm going to make the right decision in this situation, you're sort of moving the bar back to the direction where it's supposed to be. And I think there's an allusion to this in the parasha, as I said. We're doing Nitzavim. Nitzavim is, we're on Perek Lamed, chapter 30 in Nitzavim. Okay? For those of you who want, there are more chumashim over there if you're interested. Behind you, there's a couple more. Otherwise, you can follow along with me. The Moshe Rabbeinu really concludes its Tzavim with some amazing things. Perek Lamed, chapter 30. It's a very short Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. It's a very short parasha, but it's really perfect for this time of year. It's about tshuva, really strongly about tshuva. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, V'haya. When all these things befall you, habracha v'haklala, ashenatati lefanecha. Lamed aleph, pasuk perak lamed pasuk aleph, chapter 30, verse 1. There you go. Okay, all these things that I gave for you, v'hashevota el levavecha, v'chol hagoyim asher hidichecha Hashem alokecha shama. There's a word v'hashev, the term v'hashevota el levavecha. It's a very, very powerful term. What does it mean? Return to your heart. What? Tshuva, right? But when we say tshuva, what are you returning to? To be a baal tshuva, right? We normally say to be a baal tshuva, right, refers to a certain kind of person who led a certain lifestyle and now they're learning a different lifestyle. But what does leshuv mean? What?
To come back,
to return, which implies
that you were there
at some point. Right, so the term Baal Tshuva really doesn't really refer to someone who's a Baal Tshuva. Right, the Baal Tshuva does an amazing thing and tries a new lifestyle and turns over a new leaf. A Baal Tshuva is someone who was in X, went somewhere else, and now comes back to where he's supposed to be. But this idea of Hashivota El Levavecha, what does it imply if we say Hashivota El Levavecha?
That your natural state is the strong connection to Hashem.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly.
The heart knows what's right.
Correct.
It's really not the heart. It's the conscience.
Well, when the term means heart, right, I think it implies a sense of conscience, of, there's nafshecha. There's nafshecha. We're going to see that the Torah keeps using this word, levavcha ve nafshecha. Nefesh is your life, is your life soul, your physical body. I think levavcha is your conscience, your heart, your yetzer, your desires, etc., etc. So the idea is,
fell in love whatever wrong person. That's the heart, that's the wrong thing, right?
My heart. Following in love with the wrong person. I won't go there. I'll stop that. Okay, that's the heart.
When they say follow your heart, you shouldn't follow your heart, you should follow what's
right. I guess what I was going to say is a lot of people follow their heart when they're really following their desires. Those are different things. You know, what I want and what I know is good for me, or what I feel, what I know is right, are very different things. But that implies that inside of each of us, there's a lev that was yashar, or that is yashar, that we have to return to.
That's very opposite of like.
We'll get there. Very good. We're going to get there. Okay. V'shavta ad pasuk bet. V'shavta ad Hashem Elokecha, and you'll return to Hashem. V'shamata bekolo, Kechol asher anochi mitzavcha hayom. You listen to Hashem in everything that I command you today. Ata uvanecha, b'chol levavcha uv'chol nafshecha. Again, I want to point out this phrase comes back a number of times. With all your lev and with all your nefesh. What's the difference between how do you do tshuva with your lev and how do you do tshuva with your nefesh? On a simple level, I think on a straightforward level,
your,
yeah.
Your nefesh is the action.
Right, absolutely correct. I think that's absolutely correct. There's, you do tshuva with your lev, but you actualize it with your nefesh, with your body, with your, you're like, what do you do with it? Oh, I feel terrible. Oh, what'd you do about it? Oh, nothing. What does it, what does it mean if you didn't translate that feeling terrible, or I really should do such and such? You know, if you didn't do anything about it, it has some meaning, but a little bit. V'shav Hashem pasuk gimel. V'shav Hashem elokecha et shvutcha v'richa mecha v'shav v'kibetzcha mikol ha'amim asher hafitzcha Hashem elokecha shama. Hashem will return your shvutcha. Shvut, you are. Who's got English? Captives?
Yeah.
The captives. And he will have compassion on you. V'shav. A lot of shoving there, isn't there? Right? There's a lot of that. And he will return. V'kibetzcha mikol ha'amim asher hafitzcha Hashem elokecha shama. He'll gather you from all the nations from which he has dispersed you. Pasuk Dalet. Im yihyeh nidachecha b'kseh ha'shamayim misham yikabetzcha Hashem elokecha u'misham yikachecha. If you are oppressed, are at the edges of the heavens, from there God will, the Lord will God will gather you, and from there he will take you. By the way, where is that from?
Well, it's in Tfilat Shalom.
Right, it's quoted in the prayer of the State of Israel.
One minute. Mikol ha'amim in the Pasuk before implies that you're talking about a physical galut.
Correct.
But in Pasuk Dalet, b'kteh ha'shamayim, it doesn't say b'kteh ha'aretz, that if you're on the end of the aretz, I'll bring you in. That would be the natural continuation of Pasuk Gimel, but it's b'kteh ha'shamayim. I would think that it's now maybe you could imply it's moving to the spiritual, that Hashem is saying that those who are, you know, b'kseh ha'shamayim spiritually, then I'll bring them back.
In these psukim, yeah.
One applies to levavcha, the other applies to nafshecha.
In these psukim, there definitely is a dual return, implying on the one hand a spiritual return, and on the other hand a physical return.
What's a physical return in terms of, to the land?
Yeah, yeah, physical return. A return to our essence as a nation, our essence as a people. Like, this is an important theme that I think... you know, I sort of struggle with this. I don't know how many of you knew that the beginning of Elul marked the 75th anniversary of the death of Rav Kook. Anybody know that? Right. So it's important. You know, Rav Kook passed away 75 years ago. And so I started writing a post about it, and then I stopped because, like, who am I to write about Rav Kook? I don't really. I just try to learn some of his stuff. But on the other hand, I think it's so important to really for people to appreciate the level to which Rav Kook influenced every one of our lives. Without his teaching, without his influence, there's a really good chance that most of us wouldn't be here. It's important to know. So one of his most important teachings was that Judaism outside of Israel and Judaism inside of Israel are two different entities. They're two different realities. Right? One of, like, the first reality outside of Israel is this sort of shadow existence, this kind of life support existence. And the reality of Bnei Israel in Eretz Israel is us fulfilling our mission and the Jewish people returning to its essential self, to the ideals that it's supposed to represent. Very powerful stuff. So this notion of return, the physical return of Bnei Israel, brings along with it the spiritual rejuvenation of Am Yisrael, of what we're supposed to accomplish as a Jewish nation. We're in the process.
Remember, spread throughout the nations, but not Am Yisrael.
No, to a large degree, no. I know that's a controversial thing.
There are people who are, I would, argue both ways.
Right, but I'm right. Well, I mean, it depends on what you consider Am Yisrael to be. What's an Am? What's a nation? What does a nation represent? What nationality are you without a land?
We're hated equally in every country in Europe. Because so that makes us the Jewish nation.
Well, excuse me. The anti-Semitism is the opposite, is the negative reaction to our lack of nationality. It's the thing that forces us to return to our nationality. True, we're hated. But that hatred is an essential, integral part of who we are. That differentness that forces us back. That forces us to return. So, yes, are we a nation? Sure, on life support. You mean you define yourself by who hates you? You know, is that the way you really want to define yourself? No, we want to define ourselves by our essential qualities, by the mission we have in the world, etc., etc. And, you know, and that Rav Kook wrote about that a tremendous amount, and it's important to mention that. Okay, so the return is a spiritual return. What does it mean, spiritual return? Individually and nationally, but along with that comes the physical return. And just important to note that that Pasuk Dalet is quoted in the prayer for the state of Israel. Okay? It's part of a longer discussion about the prayer for the state of Israel, though. Pasuk Hey, Behaviyacha Hashem Elokecha al Haaretz. This pasuk is also quoted. And a God will bring you to the land Asher Yashu Avotecha, to the land which your forefathers inherited, V'yirishta, and you will inherit it, V'hitivcha V'hirbecha Me'avotecha. Now, just reading that pasuk, I sort of get chills. Why? Why do I get chills? I mean, want to take a wild guess?
Because the land now looks way more beautiful. And
Moshe Rabbeinu was talking about us. Now, is Mashiach here yet? No. Is the full complete redemption here? No. But look at these psukim, and what's he describing? V'haviyacha Hashem Elokecha al haaretz asher yarshu avotecha v'yirishta v'hitivcha v'hirbecha me'avotecha. It's really powerful. Like he said these things, and he was talking clearly, the Machazal teach us, he was clearly talking about the Geulah Shlishit. Right, that the final redemption, this is the last one. You know, that after which, God willing, it should be, right? That not to be total controversial, but he's describing our situation. But then comes the next part. Umal Hashem Elokecha levavcha ve'ed levav zarecha. And God will, what's lamul, mal? What? Brit milah. Right, mal, to circumcise your heart and the heart of your children. Le'ahava et Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha. That you shall love Hashem, your God, with all your heart and with all your soul. L'man chayacha, for the sake of your lives. What in the world does it mean that God will circumcise your heart? Aren't we already returning? The problem is in the chronology, this describes after the return. So what in the world could it mean to have a circumcised
heart?
There's
no such thing as a one-time, as you were saying, you know, like you were saying before about the cold turkey. There's no such concept about that. I mean, I'm reading also this book about a woman, Isabella Tshuva, and she's writing about her struggles in part of the process. There's no, like, I'm there, I'm a Bala Tshuva. There's, like, you take baby steps. You take a step forward and three steps back and two steps forward and five steps back and then one step forward and one step back, but it's like a.
But,
there's a concept of stepping
if
back.
We're dealing
you
with,
need the constant encouragement.
But if we're dealing with national tshuva, though, isn't there going to be a point beyond which there isn't any turning back?
How is that possible? We're still people.
One second. In times of the redemption that we all believe in, right?
Okay.
That we must believe in, right? After the redemption, isn't that it? The final redemption? The final redemption?
You think that there's no possibility for a national state?
Oh, let's look at Ramban. Pasuk Vav. Let's look at Ramban. Okay, you're not going to like Ramban. I know you're a rationalist, so you can stick with Ramban. Okay. look at if you have, brothers, you have Ramban on Pasuk Vav. Okay, he says, Ma'al Hashem et levavcha. What in the world is this milat haliv, this circumcision of the heart? For those who have Ramban. It says Ramban, Zeu she'amru. This is what it says. Haba l'taher misayin oto. This is a very important principle in Shuvah. You need help. If you ask Hashem for help, if you call out to Hashem, He'll help you. And anyone who's undergone this process knows that it's true. Sometimes it seems impossible. We'll get to this at the end. But sometimes it seems so hard and so challenging and so difficult. You take the first step, right, in Shuvah, Hashem just pulls you in, reels you in. Really does. Okay? Mavtichacha, God promises that if you return with all your heart, He will help you. I think is what it means. I'm going to tell you what this means. Biyad ha'adom lasot kirtzono tzadik o rasha. From the time of creation, each of us has a choice. You want to do good, you want to do bad. Right? You have a decision. Do you want to report all your Israel income on your American taxes and vice versa? Or not? I'm just sharing things that are particularly challenging. And really, it's not, this is, I think, things that we all share. Like, you know, things that are hard. You choose. Do the right thing or don't do the right thing. V'chol zman ha-Torah ken. The entire era of the Torah, this is the way it is. כדי שיהיה להם זכות בבחירתם בטוב ועונש ברצותם ברע. If you do the right thing, you have זכויות, merits. If you do the wrong thing, punishment. It's the way it is. אבל ימות המשיח, but in the days of Mashiach, תהיה הבחירה בטוב להם טבע. Choosing good will be natural. לא יתעבר להם הלב למה שאינו ראוי ולא יחפוץ בו כלל. Right? You won't want that ice cream because you don't need it. I'm not hungry. I don't need it. Right? Your heart will not desire the thing that you have no need for. V'hi ha-mila ha-nizkerekan. This is the idea of the milat ha-lev, the circumcision of the heart. Ki ha-chemda v'ha-ta'ava orla le-lev. Very interesting comment. He says your heart has an orla. Has what's an orla? What's the word? A foreskin. Like, but an orla means like a sack, a covering. Your heart has that. What's that called? That covering? Your desire, your yetzahara, your inclination to do evil. Okay? Umol halev, and the circumcision of the heart, hu shelo yachmod velo yitaveh. You no longer will have that desire. V'yashov ha'adam bizman ha'hu, l'asher haya kodem chet'o. And you will return in that era to the way that you were before the sin of Adam HaRishon. Shaya oseh b'tivo, says Ramban, what is this talking about? This is talking about the end of days, Yom HaMashiach. Umal Hashem et levavcha, God will circumcise your heart, no more sin, no more problems, not only that, no more desire, but there's a price. What's the price? No sin, no desire, no problem. What? And therefore?
No
reward. Right. But apparently, that's the way Ramban sees the end of days. Everyone does good, no one does bad. This v'hashevot elavavecha. At some point, the point of beyond of no return. Right. Yes, the process is two steps forward, one back. But after you cross over the threshold, God will circumcise our hearts. No problem.
So the yitzhar will be external, internal.
Well, won't exist.
No, if you're going to turn into the days of Adam and Rishon, the yitzhar is external.
Okay. Right, deep. And then you get into the real fun question of, well, if Adam HaRishon had no Yetzirah, how did he sin? Right, yeah, like, I don't know. That's one of the circular things. I'm sorry, Dvorah, you wanted to say?
It would seem like in an idyllic world, you don't need reward.
You do it for the right reason. Right, you're not doing it for Hashem to reward you. You mean like that?
No. Well, it's almost like you're living in paradise. What type of reward could you really want? You have every single thing that you... Like, there will be food and clothing and shelter and, like, all your needs are taken care of, and...
I personally struggle with this Ramban. Because, to me, like, much of the meaning in my life, in life in general, is the struggle and the fight to overcome, to become close to Hashem. That's what the Torah wants us to do. It wants us to have this internal struggle. And wants us to have the fight, and tells us you can win it. But in the winning it, I'm not talking about the schar, the reward, like, okay, therefore I get ice cream. You know what I'm saying? I'm not interested in that so much as the schar itself, the reward itself, in that I had to overcome, in the struggle. And I wonder what I don't really understand, I'll put it that way, what Ramban sees in this point of view of paradise in which a person doesn't have to struggle, in which there's no effort to come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't know, I don't really understand it. I'll share that with you.
Maybe it's not like after Mashiach.
Yes, end of days. Correct. Okay.
Maybe it's not. There's a difference between working and struggling, no?
What I mean by work and struggle is the desire to overcome the Yetzer Hara and do the right thing.
But say,
if you had no Yetzer Hara, how would you work or struggle? Go learn. Okay.
Presumably, you would still be working in your learning.
How?
It wouldn't be a struggle to
not want to. I mean, you'd learn all the time.
Yeah, but I mean, the actual process of doing something, like of sitting and learning, would still be work. It just wouldn't be a struggle. Like, you wouldn't have the desire not to learn. But
does that somehow take away from the meaning if I'm doing it because I have no reason not to do it?
Let's say
I press a button, right? And I have this machine, the robot, and it's holding a lulav and etrog. And I have this, and I've set it to shake it. And I press a button. And I set it to shake all day. and shaking it all day. Right? It doesn't care. It's shaking the lulav. Do I get mitzvot because my robot is shaking the lulav? Interesting question. I don't know. Okay. I know. Why?
But the point I wanted to make is what you're saying is what's great about the situation we're in now is that you have the reward, the feeling of overcoming, and that in itself is a reward, that you've worked hard and you've achieved something, so therefore that is something that you desire. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is that in this future time whereby you don't have the yetzer not to do something, but you still, in doing it, you're expending effort. So there will be an idea of working.
I could add to you, and I'm also doing the actual thing. The thing itself does have value. It's not, my robot analogy is not good,
right?
Because I'm still shaking the lulav. I'm still doing the mitzvah. You want to say that? Okay.
So I mean,
I accept that. Yeah.
But just the sake of doing a mitzvah elevates you.
If. Yeah, I guess so. If
doing
I don't.
A mitzvah in itself.
This goes back to your Adam Arishon question, which is, what did Hashem put Adam in the world to do if he had no yetzer hara? What's the purpose? What's the goal? And I don't know. That's for another time. Right. Shir part two, which will never happen. Okay. Let's go on.
Parshat Bereishit.
See, that's the thing about Bereishit. There's the problem with Bereishit, I always say every year, is there's Bereishit is like, you need like a year, right, to do all of Bereishit, but nobody wants to come to the Bereishit shir for a year because they need to know what the Parsha is. So you do Bereishit, and it's like, in many years, you don't even get Parshat Bereishit because, like, you know, Simchas Torah is on a Wednesday, and like everybody's busy, and Bereishit comes and it's gone, and like Noach is fun too, you know, but you missed all of Bereishit. There's huge stuff, creation, Cain and Hevel, whatever. Hopefully, we will have Bereishit this year. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Now it gets, I'm skipping a little bit, okay? Because I want to get to Moshe's sort of lesson. Ki ha-mitzvah hazot, asher anochi mitzavcha hayom. This mitzvah that I command you today, lo nifleti mimcha v'lo achalkahi. I'm going to read the whole section. It is not niflate, it's not wondrous to you, and it's not far from you. See where I am, Pasuk Yud Bet? Lo bashamayim hi lemor. It's not in the heavens that someone should say, who's going to go up to the heavens and take it for us and teach it to us and we'll do it? It's not on the far side of the seas. Who's going to go to the other ends of the seas and come back and teach us these things so that we should do it? No, sorry. Ki karov elecha hadavar ma'od beficha uvilvavcha la'asoto. It's very close to you in your heart to do. It's in your heart, and it's in your mouth and in your heart to do it. I'm going to read a little bit more because Moshe says it even stronger. Re'ei natati lefanecha hayom et hachayim ve'et hatov ve'et hamavet ve'et hara. I've placed before you today life and good and death and bad. Okay, Asher Anochi Mitzavcha Hayom, I command you today, Le'ahavat Hashem Elokecha Lalecha B'drachav. I command you today to love Hashem, to go in His ways, V'lishmor Mitzvotav V'chukotav Mishpatav, to keep His commandments, B'chayita V'ravita. You will live and you will multiply. U'V'rachacha Hashem Elokecha Ba'aretz Asher Atah Ba'al Hashem Elokecha. God will bless you in the land which you have come to inherit. V'im Yifne Levavcha, but if you don't listen, and you bow down to foreign gods, you will be lost. That's it. Moshe says, by the way, just reading these psukim themselves is critical. Just the way Moshe says it is very powerful. Lo nifleti mimcha, lo chokahi. It's not at the ends of the heavens. It's not at the other side of the earth, right? Ki hadavar, ki karov elecha hadavar maod. It's very close to you. Beficha uvilvavcha laasoto. It's just right there. Just do it. What's the problem? It's beautiful words. What's the problem? There's a huge problem with this passage. Well, actually, there's a few problems. But what's the problem with the whole section in general that we struggle with?
Just do it.
What's that?
Just do it.
What do you mean? Right. What do you mean?
It's not so easy. It's not
not so far, and it's very touchable, but he makes it sound very easy.
Yeah, right.
Choose good.
Just do it. Yeah, no problem. It's not so far. What?
And if you don't.
Oh, by the way, if you don't, you're going to die. Right. It's just that.
That makes it easy.
Right. You know, my response when I read this is, yeah, Moshe, easy for you. You know, like, what? How are we supposed to relate to that?
Makes the world black and white. There's no gray.
Yeah, it does seem that way, doesn't it? So is it true? I mean, obviously it's true. But how are we supposed to relate to Moshe's just, you know, the forces of light versus the forces of darkness? You know, and well, I don't understand what was so simple. Well, you know, you messed up. It was just right in front of you.
I thought Moshe was saying something a little different.
Okay.
That Moshe, you know, we got the Torah in Har Sinai. So someone, generations later, will say, well, there isn't anyone that went up and spoke to God. And there isn't anyone that, you know, had that connection, or I didn't see it. And so Moshe is saying, the Torah is here. I'm giving it to you now. And it's, you know, like, don't wait and say, oh, I don't have anyone great around me. You yourself have the capability of being great, of understanding and keeping the Torah. It's like more, I always thought this whole section was more like saying, you know, you have the... Pardon?
Like a motivational speech.
Yeah.
You can do it! You can do it!
You can do it. It's that, you know, it's...
By the way, in a way, that's exactly what he's saying.
It's not saying
it's easy.
Only with the clergy or with, you know, or in the church. It's close to you in every... person has the
chavrut
and the ability.
You should have been, what I see, I think I saw that in Sforno. Okay? He says, what does it mean? Shelo niflate. He, Sforno, says, shenitzarech leneviim. You don't need prophets. Lo rechokahi shetitzarech lechachmei hador sheyifreshu lecha. You don't need the chachamim. You don't need neviim. You know what to do.
Right.
Right?
This is a motivational speech.
Very nice. Yeah, motivational speeches are also scary speeches.
They are.
Right? Because when the guy gets up and says, you can do it! You can do it! Like, you know, can't. It's not so easy. Is it so easy? And what about the person who can't? So the initial question you have to ask yourself, let's go back for a minute, okay, to Pasuk Yud Aleph. What's that?
But is that an acceptable answer?
Yeah.
I can't.
Beautiful.
No,
what
she said.
You just say, what about the guy who says I can't? And I said, since when in the Torah is that an acceptable answer? Can't just say, okay, yeah, this is all very nice, but this one, sorry, I can't do it.
You're saying that's not acceptable?
I don't think God says it's okay for you to get a Torah.
He doesn't, but did he say it's so easy? So I thought you were talking about the pshat about that the Torah is for everybody. That's what I thought you would, that's what I thought was beautiful. The other thing I don't know.
No,
both
of them.
Karov elecha hadavar ma'od. It's very near to you. Okay. Excellent. The first I want to use the midrash and to use that to revert back and to answer our question and to come back to our friend and conclude with our friend the convicted felon. Okay, what is this? Let's go back to Yud Aleph for a minute. Ki ha-mitzvah hazot. This mitzvah. So the fundamental question that Farshim and everybody else deals with is, which mitzvah? Right, so there's a context and then a broader question, a broader interpretation. In the context, what is this mitzvah?
Tshuva.
Correct. Right, the subject that we're discussing is tshuva. Right, you b'shav, 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 you should return, 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 return. So in a sense, Moshe is saying this return is close. It's possible. And it's interesting, he says that God will return you from the b'kseh ha-shamayim, the ends of the heavens, right, and from the nations. So there's a sort of parallelism when he says, right, this mitzvah is not me'ever layam. Right. Let's say you're on the other side. Let's say you're in the heavens. You say, well, you know, I'm away from God. I'm far from God. How should I find God? So Moshe is saying, well, God is wherever you are. And the Midrash actually has this beautiful, beautiful Midrash that connotes this idea. If you look where it says, I'm sorry, it says at the very beginning, the Midrash says, on Pasuk, one second, Gimel. And I'm going to have to trade with you. V'shav Hashem Elokecha et shivutcha b'richamecha. Hashem will return your shivutim, your those who are captured. And then it says v'shav. What does v'shav mean? What?
He will return.
Who will return?
God.
Well, the same as the first child.
Right. Well, v'shav Hashem Elokecha et shvutcha means he will return he is returning, he will bring back somebody. But what's the second v'shav?
He himself.
Right. But that brings us a problem. Where did he go? So the Midrash says something unbelievable. The Midrash says, what this teaches us is, one second, Heshiv lo ne'emar ela v'shav. Doesn't say that God will bring back, rather he will return. Kaviyachol hu atzmo yashuv itcha min hagalut. The Torah teaches us that when the Jewish people are exiled, that kaviyachol, as it were, God himself goes into exile with us. Okay, that's one interpretation. The first interpretation of this whole section is talking about tshuva. Very nice. But there's another interpretation, a much broader interpretation, that says, and we'll go back to Yud Aleph, and I'm skipping around a little bit. Ki ha-mitzvah hazot. What is this mitzvah? The whole Torah. Right, which only, in a sense, makes it even harder. Right, what does Moshe say? You know this whole Torah that I've been spending these 40 years trying to teach you?
It's
easy! Yeah, you know, no problem. It's right, it's not easy. It's right in front of you. Right? It's a simple choice. It's a choice of life or death. Right? You want life? Great. You want death? Sorry. You know, it makes it sound so straightforward. How can something so complicated and so difficult?
On this level, it was straightforward.
That's one interpretation. There's a problem with that interpretation. He's giving it to us.
Maybe he's talking about spiritual life or spiritual
thing. Oh, clearly. Well, he actually was talking about physical as well. Mm-hmm. But even so, it's right there, it's not on the other side of the heavens, it's right in front of you, it's easy for you to do. It's not so easy. It's very hard.
It's easy for you to do, it's easy for you to access. You never think it's easy to do.
Lo niflati mimcha. What does that mean? Lo niflati. B'ficha b'lavavcha la'asoto. It's in your mouth and in your heart to do. If I say that to you, if I would just say those words to you about, English. Say that to your English students. No, it's right here. It's right in front of you. It's right here for you to do. Right. You just have to want it. They're they're probably not going to be so happy with you.
No, but she's right. It is right there. You might not want it, but it is there. It is accessible and available.
For all of us together here who struggle with whatever level we're on, because we all struggle, would we agree with these words? Do we identify these words? Ki beficha uvilvavcha la'asoto? It seems like right there, right in front of us.
Once you start doing something, I feel like the prospect of being about to do something new or about to mend your ways is so incredibly hard. But once you start, it generally is a lot easier.
I had that experience of getting a driver's license here. Do you ever find that, really? That I have to check my front left tire. I have to check my front left tire. It seems low. The idea of going to a garage.
It's just, you don't even know where to go.
Yeah, it's like, thanks. It's so overwhelming to me. You know what I'm saying? It's like, of course when I go and do it, he's going to be like, what was the big deal? It's not a big deal. But somehow you have this mental block. So that I definitely think is correct. I want to use the Midrash to interpret it and to bring it back to Tshuva. Yeah.
It's barur that it's benafshecha, exactly how you started the shiur. You're speaking about tshuva, that you're going back to something. So barur that it's belovavcha. That's what you're going back to. That's a source. That's where it is. It's
in you. One way to say it is our problem is that we think it's so hard. And that it's like my tire. Someone who's done it, what's a big deal? You go to the guy and he either asks for money or he doesn't and he fixes it for you. That's not a big deal. What? And you break something else, right? Okay. Quiet. I got to take care of this. But, it's so funny. We had to get a driver's license just when we got here. Just the idea of getting a driver's license was much harder in the idea than it actually was.
8.5 years.
What?
Meaning, I waited 8.5 years.
That was a mistake. And ironically, by the way, Israeli driver's licenses go, so goes tshuva, because the longer you wait, the more difficult they make it for you to do.
Right.
Correct. Okay. Somebody just read a little pamphlet, getting your driver's license as a metaphor for life. So it took me we rented a car, it took me a month and a half, 2 months to finally take care of it. I have this friend who made Aliyah this year, 4 days after he was here, he already was in Misrad Abriyut, and he got his green thing, and he had his eye exam, and he was already taking his lessons, and it was like unbelievable. And he's like, yeah, well, I got to take care of it, because it's going to cost me money. Yeah.
He had nothing else to do.
He did, but he didn't see it as a mental block. Yeah, these are things I have to do. But the thing that took me so long, nothing technical took me time. But just, oh, I got to go to Cholon. Where is Cholon? I guess it wasn't just.
Nervous.
I guess
it's nervous.
It was. No, I'm telling you now. First of all, what's your name? I'm sorry. Can you tell me? Welcome. It was nothing. It was really nothing. The lady. Right now.
You gotta get caught. You gotta come on.
It was nothing, but it was like. It was fine. It really was. I'm saying, but it was the mental, like, oh my god. Anyway. Says the Midrash, a beautiful Midrash on Ki HaMitzvah Hazot, and then we'll come back because I have to stop soon. Okay. Rabbanan Amre, 720. Okay, thank you. HaTipesh HaZeh, what about this Mitzvah? HaTipesh HaZeh. I'm reading a Midrash, you don't have it. There's a foolish person, Nichnas LeBeit Knesset, he walks into Shul, V'ra'oy Altan She'oskim B'Torah. And he sees people immersed in Torah, V'homer Lahem, and he says, Heyach Adam Matchil Lo Torah Tchila. How do you start learning Torah? Omrim lo, they say, well, tchila korev megillah. First you learn the alphabet. V'chakach b'sefer, v'chakach b'nevi'im, v'chakach b'ktubim. Then you learn Navi'im, then you learn Ktubim. Kishu gomer tamikra, shuneh b'talmud. V'chakach, and then you finish that, and you go to the next step. Finish that, and you go to the next step. But kivan sheshomeh akach, when he hears this, what does he say? Omer b'libo, hey matani alamed kozot. There's, I can't. No way. I can't. How am I supposed to learn all that? I can't do it. V'chozer min hashar, and he goes home. Meaning, if you look at the whole process, at the end result, it seems impossible. It seems daunting. It seems overarching. You say, I can't do all that. He says, but umishahu pikeach mahu aseh. Someone's intelligent. What does he do? Shoneh perek echad b'chol yom v'yom. You don't have to learn the whole Torah today. All you got to do is one parak each day. And before you know it, you've accomplished a lot. Like, you start baby steps. Start simply. And you move up, and you move up, and you move beyond. Like, there's a person I know, who I won't name, who did not have the experience of the education that I had early on in life. And he wanted to start learning, and he started a Mishnah group. Maybe 5 years later, they had finished Shisha Sidre Mishnah. Now they're already onto like three or four Masechet and Gemara they've learned. And he really had no knowledge at the very beginning. You don't start saying, I want to do Shas Sef Yomi. You start saying, I want to learn a Mishnah. And you move on from there. Kach Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu. This is what God said, Lo Nifleiti. It's not impossible. It's not wondrous. Nifleiti. The reason why it's impossible is because you're not immersed in it. And I think this is our answer for Tshuva, and so I started with. Of course, it's very difficult, almost impossible, not impossible, but almost impossible for a person who's in a certain lifestyle. Let's say, I don't know, you read novels you shouldn't read. One of the things that people do that they, you know, whatever. It's very hard to go cold turkey. Because you're already enmeshed in that certain lifestyle. To say, you know, or like, I'll share something with me. I spend, like I said, too much time in front of the computer. I do. It's very hard to say I'm going cold turkey. I'm not going to do it anymore. But it's important to say, well, what's the baby step that I'm going to take in order to move in that direction? Because, like, as we started, everything in life is a series of small choices. And I think that's the message of tshuva. That the question you have to ask yourself today, that Moshe says, it isn't black and white. Of course it's not black and white. But the simple decision that's in front of you today about whether to make the right choice or the left choice, very small, not cut it all off totally, but to make the simple choice, that can be black and white. In a sense, will I or won't I? Not am I going to change my whole life. That's very complicated. But I'm going to make the small choice in whatever it is. And I think that if we use the mitzvah hazot as a metaphor for the process of tshuva, and before you know it, Moshe says, you could do great, great things. All right, have a good weekend.